This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
It's my pleasure to welcome Joe back to the show. He is one of our lenders. He spoke at our Meet the Masters event. He's been out to several of our events over the years and has helped a lot of our clients obtain something that isn't always so easy to obtain, especially nowadays, or especially a few years ago. It's gotten a little easier, and that is none other than financing. We all love leverage because it really makes our real estate deals sing. It makes them fly, and it's not just about the leverage. It's not just about the tax deduction of the interest, but it's also, of course, about my trademark term, inflation-induced debt destruction. Inflation-induced debt destruction, one of the other hidden wealth creators of income property as an investment. So we've got some good news on the financing. It is loosening up a little bit, slowly happening here. Joe, tell us about this recent Fannie Mae rule change that allows borrowers to put less money down and get more leverage on more properties. What's the scoop?
Yeah, so recently, you know, Fannie Mae, who constantly, by the way, update their guidelines nearly every month with some kind of little change or nuance to their guidelines. But one of the major ones recently was they will allow borrowers, investment property buyers, to put 20% down now for the first 10 financed homes.
Yeah, let's compare that to what it was before. So before, they could put 20% down. Well, it used to be on the first 4 properties. And then I believe it went to the first 6 properties. But now it's all 10, right?
So here's how the trend worked. Before, it was just the first four properties you could put 20% down. And then numbers finance 5 through 10 require 25% down. And then Freddie Mac came out last year and said, we'll do 20% down up to 6 financed homes. And then Fannie Mae followed suit with those guys allowing 20% down for 6, and then still requiring 25 down for 7 through 10. And now recently they're just flat out 20% down for the first 10 financed homes, which is great for folks who are buying more homes.
Yeah, it is. It's good. So you can get that first 10 investment properties. Now, if you're married, or, you know, and if you're not, maybe this is a good incentive. You can do 10 per spouse. So 20 for the family, for the couple. But of course, both spouses need to be able to qualify. But it's 10 each at 20% down. So you can do, you know, potentially for a couple, 20 properties with only 20% down. It's pretty good.
Well, keep in mind that the primary home is part of that count as well. So if both spouses are on the primary home, that will really take up 2 spots of the 20. So a lot of the time we will refinance the primary into one of the spouses' names to make it a total of, you know, 19-9 for the guy or the borrower with the primary home, and then 10 for the spouse without any primary home debt obligation.
A lot of complex stuff goes into what I have, this is another one of my little trademark terms, I call it mortgage sequencing. I came up with that term in about 2010, I believe. You know, that's important, and that's exactly what you're talking about there, Joe. So, okay, this is good news. Now, the bad news is rates are a little higher, and the trend is, and the predictions from most people, including you, is that rates are going to go up even more. So that creates some real urgency to lock in this 3-decade-long fixed-rate financing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously the 30-year fixed-rate residential financing is still the best option out there for our investors and our buyers, as opposed to, like, commercial financing or any other vehicle. So, the urgency, I think, is now there to try and lock in as many deals as you can or lock in that rate on your properties as soon as you can because, you know, I think that with the new administration, if they do get those bills appropriated to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure, and if they do overhaul the tax code and basically put money back in people's pockets, then we're going to see some inflationary concerns. And once we see inflation start to rise, then I think our mortgage rates will begin to rise in tandem. So will that happen in the next 6 months? Maybe not, but certainly over the course of the first 2 years in the administration, I think we'll see that.
Right. And Joe, I call that inflationary benefits. Most people call it concerns like you did. But
I think the street has somewhat priced it into the market already. You know, they're just predicting that it will happen. So that's why we're seeing rates elevated since the election, because pre-election rates were about, 3/8 of a point or maybe even a half a point better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very interesting. So Trump is going to have the opportunity, though, to appoint a new Fed chair. I mean, is that going to mean that, that the Fed will be a little more friendly to the Trump administration? I don't know what you think. Tell us what you think. But I think that Yellen is not really a Trump fan. She was appointed by Obama,
It's hard to tell. I can just say from the last two Fed chairmen, they were both very dovish in their approach. They were quite cautious. I think with a new Fed chairman, you might see a little bit more some flexibility there in terms of what they might do with the Fed funds rate, et cetera. I do think that... under the Trump administration, not only will we see rates rise, though, possibly, but we'll also see home prices continue to rise.
Yeah, I think so here's the thing, and this is one of those counterintuitive things in life. And I saw this so many years in the traditional real estate business when I was in the traditional business. And this sentiment was echoed by everybody in the know in that part of the industry. And it went like this. You've got all these potential buyers sitting on different levels of fences, right? Look at it this way, right? This is kind of a metaphor. And every time the rates bump up, the lowest level of fence sitters gets off the fence and buys something. And then the rates pop up again and another whole swath comes into the market and buys something. So this may be the reason, it's one of the reasons, that inventory is so tight nowadays. I mean, there's a very low selection of good property. I mean, there's lots of crappy inventory out there. There's never a shortage of that. But good inventory is in short supply, and people got to act fast. A lot of our clients, they get their... They say they want that property, and, if they think about it for a couple of days, it's gone. So, that's just the nature of the market today. And Joe, I'm sure you see that all the time. But when rates go up, that causes urgency and it gets people to take action. People are act more out of fear of loss than desire for gain. When rates are going down, they kind of wait. There's not a lot of urgency. They're like, rates are going down and, I'm just going to wait till they get lower, right? And this is the same thing that happens, in the overall economy when you have inflation or deflation, right? And that's why deflation is such a terrible economic malady, because it causes people to wait. And if everybody just waits, then nobody trades. And, that's a disaster, obviously, right? Because the velocity of money slows.
I think it's a very common trend that when rates start to rise, those fence sitters will jump and take action. I think the good part about locking in rates, I think, with a lender like us is, we do have the ability to renegotiate the rates should the market turn and go south again and get a little bit better prior to closing. So really, we offer the best of both worlds in the sense of, hey, let's protect the rate against a possible rising rate environment while you're in process to close. But also, should it improve, we'll renegotiate that rate at no cost.
Yeah. So tell us about your rate lock. How long is it? Do people have to pay a fee to lock the rate? How does it work?
No fee to lock the rate, but we will lock the rate for a certain period of time based on the anticipated closing date written into the contract. So based on the turnkey provider's timeline in renovating and delivering the home, we're typically going to lock the rate a week or 2 weeks past the anticipated contract closing date. We want to give them a little bit of time just in case something were to arise in renovation. Maybe it's a weather-related delay or there's a... they open up a wall and there's some kind of structural issue that needs to be remediated or fixed. And we like to give and lock the rate and protect the rate for the borrower through at least the anticipated closing date, but sometimes even beyond that in case of unforeseen delays. Now, the maximum length of time we could lock a rate for is 85 to 90 days. The shortest period of time we could lock a rate for is 10 days. So you know, it just depends on where, and each individual deal has its own individual characteristics, I suppose. But a lot of it depends on the turnkey provider and their turn time.
Now, I hate to ask you this question, Joe, but I'm going to ask it. And the reason I hate to ask you this question is because, you know, a podcast is perennial. People might listen to this much later. And obviously, this is a very time-sensitive question I'm going to ask you. But what are the rates today for an investor? And just explain to our listeners the difference between non-owner-occupied interest rates and owner-occupied interest rates. What is the typical delta between those two? Investors do pay a little bit of a premium, slightly higher rate. Yeah.
Okay, so assuming all things being equal with one's credit score, let's say it's an excellent credit score of 740 or above, you know, the down payment requirement is going to, you know, rate's going to be indicative of a couple of things. The down payment, the 20% versus 25% is going to have a difference in rate. Obviously, the credit score plays a factor in rate, but also the property type, which you mentioned, Jason, whether it's a primary residence or an investment property, whether it's a single family investment property or a multi-unit investment property, you're going to have what we call loan level price adjustments to rate. So specifically on the property type, if it's an investment property, single family home versus a primary residence, single family home, the delta, so to speak, or the add-on to rate or the loan level price adjustment, whatever you want to call it, for that individual investment property, single family home, is going to be about 0.5 point to 0.75 point higher in rate, you know, depending on the down payment and credit score of the borrower. So again, if you put 20% down, the rate today would probably be somewhere like 4.99 with no points. If you put 25% down, we're going to lock in 4.625 with no points. So that same rate as a primary residence could today be 4% or 4.125 for that same 30-year fixed rate.
Okay, give us the investor, just repeat the investor rates. Mm.
Investor rate today for 20% down with a good credit score is 4.99.
Okay, and 25% down, what does that make it?
4.625.
Okay, and that's a 30-year fixed rate loan.
30-year fixed rate, mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Those rates are incredible.
Incredible.
And that's
without,
they're still great.
No points as well. So we're not charging points to buy down the rate there. Some lenders in this space, because the loan amount is so small at times, will charge those additional points to get competitive in rate.
Okay, good. Wow. That's just incredible. So where do you think the overall real estate market is going? And maybe any thoughts on the economy in general, if you want to share them, under the new administration?
Well, I think, a lot of folks in our industry are, you know, looking forward to a Trump administration, being that he's a real estate guy himself. So, you know, I do think, like I said earlier, housing prices, I think prices will continue to rise. I think, albeit, you know, in the traditional sense of maybe 1% to 3% appreciation year over year, we're not going to see the 5%, 6%, 7% appreciation that we did prior to, you know, in the early parts of the 2000s and prior to the crash. So I think you'll see normal appreciation. Rates, again, may continue to rise. But overall, I think we're welcoming the new administration in terms of real estate. We think that he may replace the head of the CFPB or even get rid of Dodd-Frank altogether, which would be
slow down a second here. I just want to make sure people know what the CFPB is. That's the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is the new agency created under the Dodd-Frank Act. And many of it, you know, we've spent a lot of time on the show talking about the Dodd-Frank Act. But just for those of you who don't know, that's something that came out of the financial crisis. It's been very restrictive on lenders. You know, it's yet again another example of how people that really don't understand business or the real estate market or economics or anything, you know, government bureaucrats like Barney Frank created this 2,200-ish page bill that people have a very difficult time understanding, and it puts a lot of roadblocks up, and it really gets in the way. And Trump has specifically said he is going to dismantle Dodd-Frank. Now, he may not succeed, but there are a lot of interim steps in that, right? He might dismantle part of it. He could soften it. He could change the enforcement of it. So even without changing the actual act, you know, you can change the enforcement, right? There's quite a bit of latitude there, and something good is going to happen. I mean, it's good for us. So what about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? What were you saying about that, though?
You know, I think the head of that right now, the leader of that bureau right now, is someone who the Trump administration has indicated they may replace, you know, with someone who is a little bit more friendly to, you know, administering the, you know, Dodd-Frank, for example, and creating some leniency that doesn't exist today with the current leader of the CFPB. So we're kind of waiting to see what happens there with leadership of the CFPB, and whether or not that will in turn lead to those, you know, alleviations of the restrictions of the Dodd-Frank Act.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, good. So that's going to be good news in terms of more money flowing into real estate because there's more financing availability. You know, I mean, assuming it happens, of course. And so that's great news. What else do you see?
You know, I think that, you know, overall, as the economy grows or as these bills get appropriated by the Trump administration for, you know, creating more jobs in the U.S., overall, it's just a generally good mood to create for the real estate investor and for homeownership in general. I think that regardless of where rates are, people are still going to be purchasing homes, and the dream of buying homes in the U.S. is not diminishing, I think, in any fashion whatsoever, although we rely on a lot of rental income properties to create this wealth for our buyers. However, I do think that overall that the mortgage level of ownership and the home ownership level is not going to diminish under this administration.
Yeah, and as I've said before, I actually wish the home ownership rate would decline because I like renters, and I actually think it's kind of artificially high. But yeah, I do think under Trump, it's actually going to increase and improve, and he's going to use that as, you know, for bragging rights. It's at really the lowest level it's been in about five decades. But overall, you know, you either play it as a capital gains thing. If the market is on fire, everybody's buying properties, then the prices are going to go up. If the market's not on fire and everybody's sitting tight and renting properties, then the rents are going to go up. So you have one or the other. And that's the beauty, is that, you know, you have a multidimensional asset class. So you can work with different dimensions and adapt to the market at that given time. And so that's a wonderful thing. Talk to us a little bit about this sort of unseen thing that happens in the market. You know, it's everybody sees interest rates. Everybody sees the requirement for how much do you have to put down. But what they don't really see, and it's, you know, I would call this like a softer item, but it's really not soft at all. It's a hardcore item. And that is, they don't see either the ease or the difficulty of qualifying.
Oh my God.
And I know this is the one that drives everybody nuts. And this really, we almost have to segment this into, you know, two categories of people. One is the traditional home buyer, the owner occupant, and the other is the investor. And it is hard to qualify. And that limits the amount of competition of investors out there putting more rental properties on the market, more rental supply, and that increases rents ultimately because, you know, it puts upward pressure on rents. And so it's what I want you to do is see that everything negative also has a positive. And there's a positive component to that. You know, when it's really easy to qualify, everybody is increasing the supply of inventory, right? You know, and I'm talking about rental inventory, and then your rents get suppressed. You see downward pressure on rents when there's more competition for tenants. So, you know, it depends what side of the equation you're on. But talk to us about difficulty of qualifying or ease of qualifying. I mean, it's getting a little easier, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, I'm a veteran loan officer. I wrote loans and wrote paper long before the crash or the recession.
How long have you been in the business?
16 years.
Okay.
So went through the phase of, you know, where it was super easy to qualify for folks to buy properties and hardly produce any documentation. So, you know, is it a good thing that now we're underwriting files and writing more quality paper since the recession? I think absolutely.
Overall, however, it's better, sure.
But ultimately, the knee-jerk reaction to that, correction in terms of underwriting and documentation was very severe. I think we're just seeing now, 3, 4, 5 years after the recession, coming out of the recession, we're seeing some of those guidelines become less restrictive and become a little bit more lenient for borrowers. I think your self-employed borrower still has the biggest burden of documentation to produce, because a lot of those guys will have multiple companies or multiple K-1s, and they'll have their you know, various income streams, as opposed to the salaried employee who is still relatively over-documented, I think, but certainly not as much as a self-employed borrower. So as we proceed into this administration and maybe the leniency created in the Dodd-Frank Act, then we might see these compliance regulations that we're so severely held to kind of get released and relieved a little bit for us, which in turn will help us, you know, push loans through faster and close loans quicker and require less of our borrowers. Because right now we're still double crossing the T's and double dotting the I's, and underwriting is very tight.
Yeah, it's very difficult to qualify, in other words. And, you know, look, folks, this is a pendulum. It's always swinging back and forth, just like societies throughout history. You know, society swings to the liberal side, then it swings to the conservative side. And, you know, everything's always swinging back and forth. You know, fashions change. Everything changes all the time. Okay. And the beauty of income property is that once you buy it and once you own it and you control it as a direct investor, you're basically getting yourself an option to make a change later. So, for example, you could take out financing today, close on your property, own it for a year, and say, for example, the requirements get easier and the interest rates go down, you can refinance. You know, you've got to get in the seat to where you own the property, because then you have options and you have control. Until then, you're just an outsider and the prices go up without you and you're left behind. You know, the ship leaves the dock. So that's what you want to do. You want to get yourself in the position where you have options. So that's very important. Good. This has been very informative, Joe. I really appreciate you joining us. And you can contact Joe through any of our investment counselors. They can put you in touch with them. Just go to jasonhartman.com. They'll get you in touch with Joe. They can set up a conference call with you or an email introduction, whatever it takes. And of course, many of you listening have been to our live events and you met Joe in person, and he's a nice guy and he's got a great accent, and you know, he's a good loan officer too, just as a side thing, side benefit.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
All right. We appreciate having you on, Joe. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.